From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food.
You know, was really kind of the foundation of what the movie Chef was about. It's about being appreciating the people around you, appreciating what you're doing, being mindful about those things. And I think that's a message that's really nice.
Over the past year, an unprecedented number of food shows have hit streaming platforms. It's hard to keep up. Still, one of the bigger surprises has been The Chef Show on Netflix. The show's now in its second season and owes its success largely to the easy camaraderie of its two stars, famed director Jon Favreau and chef Roy Choi, his culinary mentor.
Jon really gave me the opportunity to be myself on screen. That's how I am in my kitchens.
I think people are smart. I think people pick up on things. I think they just want to see authenticity.
Their friendship began when Favreau was preparing to direct and star in his movie Chef, which came out in 2014. After that project wrapped, Jon and Roy kept cooking together. Since then, they've developed an effortless dynamic that makes it easy for others to join in, whether celebrity or trained chef. There's so many laughs that it's startling to realize how much you're actually learning. I want to play a brief clip for you now.
You grew up in Pico Rivera, right?
Yeah, born and raised in...
I used to cruise with
you. Were you
all the time.
Really? What'd you drive?
From 16 to 18, I had a lowered Blazer.
I was going to say, like the Blazer, the CRXs?
Yeah, I was part of a crew out in Norwalk called Street City Minis, and then...
Did you have the airbrush on the back of the
car? Oh, I had the whole airbrush, everything.
Those are so rad, man.
I play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, you play Dungeons and Dragons.
I cruised a halfling thief.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
So let's go through a bit of a refresher. How did you first meet?
Well, I was, I had written the script for Chef, and we were looking for an idea for somebody who could help be a consultant at first. And members of my team that I work with were going through, because we had a lot of foodies in my group, and we were going through lists of names of chefs, and they pulled up Roy's name. And I knew Roy, not personally, but I knew his truck because Gwyneth Paltrow had brought the Kogi truck to the set of Iron Man. And I loved the truck. But I didn't realize how close his story was actually to the script I had written. It was so much so that I was actually getting concerned. I was like, he's going to think I ripped off his life story because he had gone from fine dining to opening up a food truck out of passion. And then that led to his success. And so I met with Roy, and Roy was very open to the idea of collaborating on it. And his only stipulation was that a lot of films don't get the culture right, and we really have to honor the chef culture if we were going to do this. And if we would do it, he would be tireless in helping me train and also putting together menus, overseeing the food. And unlike most consultants, I mean, he was really there day in, day out through pre-production and actually in post-production too. So it became much more of a partnership. He became one of the producers on the film, and we formed a friendship that has continued since then.
So the film wraps, you do all the stuff you have to do after a film wraps, but you keep cooking. Talk about that period of time before Chef Show happens, lands on Netflix and starts to air, and where the two of you are just inviting people in to cook together without a deal. I mean, I was one of those people where you said, "This is kind of weird, but just come on over. It's like full continuity. We're just going to shoot it in real time." And I had a blast. It was one of the best times cooking on camera ever.
Yeah, we started filming. I just decided that because I didn't want any kind of interference creatively, that I would just finance this thing. And I knew what it would take to make something compelling and to treat it more like a documentary than to treat it like a show with a heavy format. I knew that from my experience working on shows like Dinner for Five and just being in the editing room on movies, that post-production is really when you do, it's really when you write the story. Even if you have a script and you shoot the script that you think you have, it's really post-production where the personality and identity of the project comes together and coalesces. And so my feeling was if we just had real moments and filmed us doing the real thing, I was confident that if I had enough time in the edit bay, that I could figure out a format and a structure for it. It was allowing those things to emerge, not unlike how Roy works with food, where he'll pick good ingredients, put them together, start, you know, especially like a savory chef, they'll start adding flavors and start seasoning and start be inspired by what's in front of them. As a filmmaker, you have to be open to that too. And so this format for the chef show emerged, and I started adding music that Matthew Schreier oversaw with Leon Michaels. Matthew is a KCRW DJ. And we put together the music, the stop motion, and a format emerged from us filming, us cooking. And the only objective was to actually be authentic, genuine, and cook with people who were as excited about cooking as we were.
One of the things I love the most that I've really noticed on the second season, Roy, the way you gently boss people around is so perfect. I mean, you assign people tasks, and usually they're monumental prep tasks. There's a lot of washing and cutting. And the conversation that starts to ensue while everybody's hands are busy, I think it's genius because it disarms people.
That's right.
Yeah. And that was the premise of the show from the beginning. That was the vision that John had. And I think we were secretly prepared, even though we were crafting it as we went, we were prepared to fill our roles for the show. Because, I mean, John, he knew what he was going to do filmmaking-wise. For me, I really loved shows like Julia Child, Sarah Moulton, America Test Kitchen.
Teaching shows.
Teaching shows that were cooking and were real time, that were cooking all the way through. And I can cook almost anything on this planet. I may not be able to make the best thing, but I can pretty much figure out almost any recipe. And then we just decided to cook the stuff that we wanted to eat. So with that, everything became so natural. When you do interviews and media, people get certain ideas and glances of who you are because you don't have that much time. But this show really allowed me to be who I really am in the kitchen. So
I mean, the two of you are so great together, the yeah. way you're constantly ribbing each other. Yeah. And when others get in on the action, the first episode of the second season is Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
I watched it twice.
Oh,
I watched
great.
It yeah. and I immediately watched it again. First of all, it was hilarious, which of course one expects that, but one does not expect Seth Rogen to have certain skills like knowing how to break down a
yeah,
chicken.
And we learn about that in the show. Yeah.
And the fact that you allow that to unfold, a guy like Seth, I mean, you can't muzzle him, right?
And just thinking real quick back what you're saying about the natural teaching, that's kind of my, to be honest, my defense mechanism, because these guys are pros, man. I can't keep up wit-wise, you know, and comedy-wise. I don't know if you've ever been in, but I've been in
you're,
it. You're not only with John.
Though.
Yeah, not only with John and Seth, but like I've been on podcasts and other things with like comedians, and I can see the jokes flying, but I can't catch up. So this show allows me to give them carrots, and then it gives me time to catch up, you know, to catch up to the joke and throw one in.
There's one point where Seth asks you, because what you're doing in that particular show was, it was two dishes. It was a fried chicken, and it was one of your mom's braised chicken dishes.
Yeah.
And the braised chicken dish required a million pastes, which is your thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Seth asks you why you're putting all these pastes in the pot. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just make one paste?
He actually made me think about it. I don't know why, but I do know why, but I don't know why. But the reason why is because what I said was sometimes, like with music, sometimes things take layers. And even though from an intellectual standpoint, it may make sense, why don't you just put everything in one? Because they're all there anyways, but sometimes it takes layers to create depth of flavor. That's why I create a sauce, add a sauce, then take that sauce and add it to another sauce, and then combine those into the other sauce that first started, and then that becomes one sauce, but then that combines with four other sauces, but they're all very similar, but they're very different.
If it didn't taste so good, I would question it,
yeah.
but there it does, you can
yeah.
taste it. And that's what's also fun, is that after all that joking around and questioning and it seems like we're just slamming from guardrail to guardrail. Then you taste the food and it's amazing. So the proof is in the pudding. I think it frees people up to know that the process, and some recipes are super simple, like grilled cheese mm-hmm. or what we did, the peach galette, you know, it's not a lot of steps, not a lot of ingredients, but when you're busy doing something, the conversations become effortless and there's people cooking food that they don't understand and they learn about it through the cooking and through the tasting. And you have conversations like at Gorilla Tacos,
yeah.
You and Chef Wes had such a common
experience. We were basically the same person.
Yeah. And like that, nobody, I don't think anybody would guess that. But, you know, I guess you both have your different takes on similar cuisine. But the fact that there was so much in common in your background, that comes out because you're cooking together. And to me, that's what makes it interesting.
And what I love, too, is the fact that you're pinging back and forth between chef guests and non-chef guests is fascinating. Like, as an interviewer, when Seth Rogen, because you were referring to one of your pastes that you were making as pork sauce.
Yeah.
That's the magic sauce?
This one is going to be the pork sauce.
Pork sauce.
Pork, we need pork sauce.
Is there pork in there, or is it sauce
for
pork?
No, it's a pork marinade.
That we use for chicken? Used,
yeah. That we're using for chicken, yes.
This is a confusing recipe, guys. No one's going to be able to...
And so when Seth asked you, well, is there pork in the sauce? Are you putting pork on chicken? And I thought to myself, what a great question.
Yeah.
And those of us who are in it, right, in the business, you would never ask that question.
Yeah, because that's shorthand for us. And John is now, he's kind of... crossed the borderline, and he's halfway in, halfway out. So he understands the shorthand. And for us, it's just, it makes sense.
Totally.
It's a pork marinade, but we're using it for bok choy. It doesn't matter. It's the flavor.
Let's talk a little bit about a couple of the other episodes. You go and visit Daniele Uditi.
Yes. Mm.
Who's chef of Pizzana here in LA. And for those who don't know him, he's a native of Naples, and he trained in the region of Campania. Why did you choose him?
I was to his restaurant. And he's from a part of Italy that my family's from that I'd never been to. And my grandmother was born here in New York. So we're whatever, fourth, fifth generation. But the food that he cooks and the style of how he cooks, I would just associate with my grandma's food. So I was really, really into his cooking. And also the restaurant when it opened up was a Jonathan Gold. It all comes down to Jonathan Gold always. He's the Rosetta Stone. And that's what brought us together and jazz over at Jitlada. And so he left behind this map, like this Indiana Jones map.
It's true.
And if you stick with what John, there's a lifetime of experiences you could have by just looking and appreciating things through his eyes. And so what happens is he's such a good writer that you'd be curious. And that place opened up not far from where I live. So I went in there. Daniele was around. And when we started doing it, I asked, you know, would you be open to it? And he's like, yeah, show up at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
We're going to make the dough. And so we showed up at 5 a.m.
It was dark outside. I assumed it was night after he closed.
No. It's 5 a.m. Yeah. And we were there. And part of it also is showing that, hey, no, we're going to get our hands dirty here. We're not here just to do a little feature.
He was blown away by your ability.
That's very kind of you. I think he was impressed that we took it that seriously and that we really
he appreciated went in the ranks. More he than did. Impressed, he appreciated the fact that we went all the way through with it.
And what's great now, because remember, we filmed a lot of that stuff years ago, some of it. So when it finally came on the air and people saw, you know, we put together a little meatball hero.
Which he wasn't serving at the restaurant.
No, I was just looking at the bread. The bread was so good and the meatballs are so good. I was like, do you mind if we try it? He's like, oh yeah, let me throw something together. He ended up serving that, saying it on Instagram, and he said it was like the movie Chef, where people were lined up around the block. He had to bake more bread because people wouldn't leave. And he called the sandwich the Grandma Joan, which was my grandma's name. So to me, that's honestly one of my proudest moments, you know, compared to all the things that I've experienced. That one really hit home. I told my dad, and he was proud because my grandma used to make little meatball sandwiches for us when we traveled. They didn't taste as good. Sorry, Grandma. They didn't taste as good as the ones from there, but it was like he gave the chef treatment to what I'm used to eating with my grandma. And my grandma's been gone for a long time, and so those flavor profiles that come from that region of Italy, to taste those things brought that memory back to me. And the fact that other people are eating the sandwich and waiting in line for it, and now it's going to be part of his menu. I don't know. There's something that's really satisfying about it. And this project, I have to say, as effortless as it started, has turned into something that has meant a great deal for us. I enjoy doing it so much. And I love now with social media that how people are reacting to it. I love that it's getting them to cook, and I know that you've had people send you pictures of peach galettes, and that's really fun. But also people like, it's so nice to go home and watch the show and it makes me feel so good. Or if I'm feeling anxious, I love to watch you guys hanging out.
Because actually in, I think it was the Seth Rogen episode, you were musing, I think, or Seth was musing about, why do people like watching people making food? You can't smell it. You can't taste it. What is it that gives people pleasure?
I don't know. I just know it's incredibly cinematic, yeah. You know?
And but soothing for people.
It's very
we're
soothing.
We're like a virtual aromatherapy.
And then you could really eat the stuff because a lot of the stuff you could make, like you could make, like the day after we cooked together when we baked the peach galette, there was we made two crusts and one was left over. And I took that crust and I made a galette the next day. It wasn't as good as yours, but it was close.
Sure it was.
Close enough that I got to get the sense of satisfaction that I did that. And what's so great is that there's like dishes that aren't hard to do, like the pasta, we call it Scarlett's pasta, pasta al yol, and grilled cheese sandwiches. There's stuff that doesn't have a million ingredients that you could make. And we even posted some of those recipes on thechefshow.com for people. But we're going to have to do a cookbook or something.
I have to tell you that I'm going to make, well, I don't know if I can unless you write up the recipes, but that braised chicken dish of your mom's, I like, I'm obsessed.
You can get the recipe from Natasha. But I think you're hitting it on the head with the food that we're choosing to show on screen. Kind of like what Robert Rodriguez says, cook the food that you want to eat. And cook that food over and over and over again and get good at it. And then you can get good at something else instead of trying to cook something once that's really hard. So I think that's a huge part of why the show just connects to so many, because it's food that you can actually feel like you can grab and make and eat.
So tell me, where have you guys been eating around town lately?
I went to Felix for the first time, and I love Chef Evan Funky. And now what's cool is I used to, when I would travel around with Roy, I was always impressed with how, like when we went to Emeralds, when we were prepping to do the film chef, and I got pulled into the kitchen with Roy, and they would not let him leave. And we were at the chef's table, and course after course, each one with a story as he sat there and prepared it for us. And that was, to me, it's like the Lady and the Tramp when you get the bowl of spaghetti and meatballs and they play accordion for you. It's like you feel like it's the soignee. It's a real experience.
And I remember you noticed Emerald's eyes as he's watching us and the love that he's giving.
And you understanding that and that exchange was, to me, very pure and really cool and memorable. And now when I go to a restaurant and when I went to see to Felix, chef saw me there and treated me almost like an honorary chef, and would pull me into the kitchen, show me his machine, show me how they made it. And I want to cook pasta with him too. And of course, it's an amazing restaurant. Just even if you went there without that, it would be great. But I was really impressed with how much care that went into it, and that they speak to me now as though I'm somebody. I'm not just a tourist moving through there, but somebody who would appreciate what they do.
I actually don't eat out that much. I'm a creature of habit.
So. I completely get it. I get it, John. What about cooking at home? Do you take on projects, things that you like deep? I would imagine you're a deep dive kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm a deep dive kind of guy. That's a good read. I would, when I, after working on Chef and meeting Aaron Franklin, really worked a lot with smokers, with Adam Perry Lang, getting pointers from people like that. So I worked on brisket for a while. That you have to stay up all night for that, though. That's a hard one. And then I started doing, after I saw Nancy Silverton on Chef's Table, I really got curious about sourdough. And so I've been doing sourdough for a few years, and now I'm pretty consistent with that. And it's something everybody loves. And if you bring a sourdough that you've cooked to somebody or that you baked, it means a lot. And it's almost like botany too, because you have to understand the starter and feed the starter.
It's like having a pet.
It really is. And then and then when you get it right, there's such a great feeling of satisfaction. And everybody loves good bread.
Yeah. One of the things that I found really fascinating is the way you just jump in. There's no voiceover narration establishing what's about to go on. And especially I noticed it in the first episode. It was like you just started like in the middle of a sentence, picking up a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with streaming, there's too much choice. Like, here's what we're doing. Like, do you like it? If you do, this is it. And if you don't, switch now.
Yeah, I remember when we first were talking about the show, John had the vision of just jumping right in, and it made sense to me, and using the animation to maybe do whatever explanation was needed, But beyond that, just jumping in. And, you know, certain things take certain paths, but I think like certain restaurants you want to research and learn about the chef and all that. But I equate our show to like driving, and then around the corner, all of a sudden you see a string of lights and there's a taco stand with like a huge line and you never knew it was there. And it's a bit of discovery. And in that moment, you don't have to learn the whole Wikipedia page about that taquero. You just go and experience the thing. You jump right in. I feel like our show has that vibe and that energy.
Is it too early to ask if there's going to be a season 3?
I don't know what we're officially supposed to be saying, but we've filmed other stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of
stuff. So I don't know how it fits in with Netflix. Yeah. So I don't want to step on anything they're doing, but we did a lot, and we want to do more, and we will do more. And what's nice about now is that and Netflix has been a wonderful partner, but I don't think what we're doing is going to be limited by you know what? That's what's nice about what's going on in media now. You're not limited by gatekeepers. And right now it's been a wonderful partnership with Netflix. I think we found the right place because people who love food, there's so much good food content on that streaming service that to have somebody who's curious about Chef's Table find our show is not a bad thing. And they've been very supportive. And I think this partnership's going to go on for a while. And Netflix was cool enough to put up the Seth Rogen episode on YouTube.
Yeah, I think that was a revolutionary move.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that way it's not...
Because usually you have to have the account.
Bring them in.
Yeah.
Come into our tent.
But it's also an opportunity to see what it's like if you don't have it, you know? Everything's emerging. You know, there's new... The way people are creating content, the way that they're consuming content, short form, long form. You know, we were talking... When you greeted me about the deep dive that you could take, what was the show you're telling me? I have to check it out on YouTube about the
Pasta Grannies.
Pasta Grannies. I can't wait to watch that based on just what you're saying.
I really want to hear what you have to say. Mm-hmm. This really lovely woman, Vicky Bennison, who lives in the Abruzzi region of Italy, she noticed that the tradition of making all of these amazing regional pastas was being held in the hands of women who were 70 and older, and she was afraid that it was just going to disappear. So she started documenting women. And then she started putting them up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And now it's like a thing. It's becoming more and more a robust channel. And it's like literally some of them you're watching 100-year-old and 97-year-old women who are so engaged.
I mean, that's the nice part about technology, really, because when else could that have been something that could have fought for the oxygen required to be
absolutely
content? And so now if that's something you want to seek out, and you're saying it's getting a pretty big following, which shows you
has almost 500,000.
I mean, that's amazing.
On the channel.
I think that's amazing. That's rivaling, you know, a lot of shows would be lucky to have that kind of viewership on network. So, you know, I'm very grateful that we're getting to do something that's as effortless and coming together as this has been. But now that it has its personality and has its structure, it's something we want to continue doing. And I love seeking out and seeing that type of thing. And you could find whatever you're interested in now. And it becomes hard to just sit down and say, okay, it's 8:00. What am I going to watch on TV?
Yes.
We're spoiled now. We're getting to watch, you know, the production value might not be as big as Iron Chef, but if you're watching these, you know, these grandmothers cooking and passing that knowledge down, to me, that's fascinating. So I look forward to seeing it.
We should do a collab, Chef Show and Pasta Grannies.
No, that's that's totally, I was thinking what
right
you were saying.
Alley,
I was like, oh, we got to find out, you know, we got to go.
It's right up our alley.
It is exactly what it is. Because we're talking about home cooks more.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roy, a lot of what Roy does is an extension of what he learned. You know, it's not just his training, but a lot of it's what he grew up around. And now my son is cooking the food, you know, that was passed down from his parents, from Joroy's parents, through me to my son.
Yeah, he just sent me sundubu that his son was cooking by text. Yeah,
that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for giving so much pleasure.
Thank you for being part of it, too. You were part of one of our first episodes.
I think your episode is probably one of the most favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice.
For many reasons. For your pie, for Jazz, for Jonathan, and just, I think, the camaraderie that all of us had.
I like watching Roy be a student, because when Jazz came in, Roy was not the teacher anymore.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That was just...
We got to do that again. We got to find
really
people.
Really fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything.
I've been talking with Roy Choi and Jon Favreau. Season 2 of The Chef Show is streaming now on Netflix.